Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
You betcha. We got a good one. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Seriously, a little something for everyone in this one. A little later on, we'll be talking with Vincent Jenna. They call him a visionary. He's a psychic therapist. He's a medium, a lot of different things. We're going to be talking about fulfill your dreams. That's going to be coming up. But in the meantime, while we're thinking about fulfilling our dreams, what about this thing called sex talk? hey, don't get ahead of me. We're going to have a good one on this one. Wait till you hear.
Every time we meet, everything is sweet. Ooh, you're so tender, I must surrender. My love is yours.
Well, are you sure that's the one that you really want to be with? Well, it's time for some sex talk. Now, don't get too excited. There's some real talk about how biological sex affects communication. Now, it's not the intersection of, I should say it is about the intersection of biology and communication and how biological sex influences gender communication differences throughout our life stages. Well, we looked at Dr. Stephen Furlich and his over two decades researching communication at the university level to shed light on that relationship. And he shares all that information in his book called Sex Talk. Nice to have you with us, Dr. Furlich.
Thanks, Mary Jane. It's nice to talk about this topic with you.
Okay. Define gender communication and why they're different.
So one of the things I tried to do with the title of my book, Sex Talk, was sort of
I know you did it. You wanted to get my attention. That's why.
I was trying to get on the radio.
Yeah, there you go. You did it.
So,
let's talk.
Biological sex is what's our biology made of? Our chromosomes, our sex hormones, our brain structures, things like that. Whereas with gender is, how do we express those things? How do we communicate? How do we dress? How do we act? How do we perceive and understand? So the gender is more the social aspect of it, and then the biological sex is more the biology behind it. So with the title itself, I try to play on it how our biological sex influences the way that we talk, communicate.
Okay, well, I can understand how gender is the social. That can be changed, yeah. But the biological, aren't we stuck with it?
That's a good point and a good question. And that's one of the things that I try to stress throughout my book is to understand yourself and other people based upon biological sex because you can only change it so much. So there's a few things that could change it, such as lifestyle, diet, exercise. Those things could shift your sex hormone levels, different experiences. But for the most part, I take the stand throughout my book that well over 50% of the way that we communicate is based upon our biological sex. So I'll just give you a few examples.
Yeah, please. I'm confused.
How this influences it.
Okay.
So at conception, everybody pretty much starts off similarly on the same track of what we usually think of as female. Much easier to make a girl than it is a boy. And then about 4 months after conception, that's when the sex hormones kick in. And so sex hormones that create differences in the brain structures between males and females, whereas science can now analyze the human brain with over 90% accuracy, predict if it's male or female. And then after my book came out, a new study from Stanford, they actually looked at the brain activation and the way that we think cognitively in social situations and other ways as well, they can see different areas activated at different intensities and predict over 90% if it's male or female. Hmm. So with the human brain itself, it's not only the structure, but the activation, but then the sex hormones themselves. Males, adult males tend to have about 20 times as much testosterone, and adult females tend to have about 20 times as much estrogen, and those things influence our behaviors as well. So it's sort of a puzzle. I always talk about that as pieces of the puzzle that we're trying to put together, and all those factors influence the way that we perceive, understand, communicate.
But what about upbringing, influence, environment? Won't that make changes?
So one of the things, the way I see it is that we're born on a particular continuum, so on a particular point on a line, and we could shift on that line to some degree, but I haven't seen anything in some of the topics that I discussed, such as language ability, some spatial ability, nonverbal understanding, those areas where you could actually overcome and become much better than the opposite sex, so to say.
Okay.
So my point is you can improve, but you can't really. So, for example, females from early age through adulthood are always better at nonverbal communication, understanding other people, and there's biological reasons for it. So regardless of how much social impact it has on a boy, for the most part, they're never going to have that ability as what girls do because of those biological factors.
So what about the guys?
The guys ourselves, we're at a disadvantage when it comes to nonverbal understanding. That's one of the things that in relationships,
well,
people need to understand.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Females more nonverbal. I may question that because I think we're a lot more verbal than you think.
Nonverbal understanding. Empathize, understand people much better than what males do.
Oh, okay. So there's got to be something that males do that females don't. Like what?
So one of the things that there's a number of things. Rather consistently, what's been found is that males are much better when it comes to spatial ability.
Now, what is spatial ability?
Directions. Motion, action, stuff like that. So it's been found consistently that males do much better at cardinal directions, north, south, east, and west, and also like hand-eye coordination, directions, following objects. Boys at early age tend to follow objects, whereas with girls, they tend to look at faces much more so. So they're much interested in the social aspect girls are, and then boys much more into objects.
Oh, okay.
So another thing is,
yeah,
this is something interesting that I think relationships may help. You asked what are the things that males do that we're better at?
Mm-hmm.
Resting. We can rest much better. So I have a chapter 13, it's called the man trance.
Mm-hmm.
So we could shut off the rest of the world and just rest much easier than what females can do.
Oh, that's...
It's been found that females have much more of a heart rate variability when they rest.
Huh.
So it's more activity that's going on. And part of that is due to emotions and that there's more of an emotional stimuli even trying to rest.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So taking that into relationships, she needs to understand that if he's trying to rest or just watching TV, it's not probably the best time to have a conversation.
You know, so it's interesting that you say that because I had, this was quite a few years ago when Dr. John Gray came out with his book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Yeah.
And he basically said, you know, if the guy is sitting there reading or whatever and he's kind of in his own little cave, don't try to communicate because it's not going to be there. It's just not there.
All it's going to frustrate both of you. He's going to get agitated that you're interrupting him, and she's going to get agitated because he's not listening.
Exactly. So how do the two come together? I mean, how do you work these things out?
The best thing is to empathize and understand from the other person's perspective. So, for example, with the communication itself, the exact same intention can be understood differently. So females, like we already talked about, are much superior when it comes to nonverbal communication and understanding other people. So she's going to look into the nonverbal behaviors of the other person at a much deeper level and have a much deeper understanding beyond just the words themselves, Whereas with the male, he's going to have a much more literal understanding of what's being said. Part of the reason why, some of the reasons behind that is that females have higher levels of oxytocin during social interactions. That's that bonding chemical, so they empathize and understand the other person better. They have more mirror neurons that are activated. That prepares your body to display the same nonverbal behaviors that you see someone else. So therefore, you have a similar emotional experience and understand them better. But one of the biggest things is that came across to me is, and as far as I'm concerned, this science is settled, is that females have a much more interconnected brain. They have more connections across both hemispheres. Us males, we're more connections within each hemisphere. So it allows her to access, and she has more overall brain activation during social interactions. So it allows her to connect to different areas of her brain to analyze the nonverbals and also participate in the conversation and tie in emotion as well, whereas with us males, we're much more compartmentalized. We can do one or the other, but expect us to do all three at the same time, it's much more difficult. So one of the things to understand from his perspective is that he's going to understand much more literally what's being said, and from her perspective, she's going to read much more into beyond just the words and into the nonverbal behaviors as well.
Yeah, that gets us in trouble. It really does.
Here's something I'll throw out there, Okay. Maybe controversial or not, and you could comment on it. Sort of my opinion that maybe sometimes because of this superior nonverbal ability by women, sometimes they overanalyze things and overthink it, and that gets overcomplicated. And then sometimes us males, we oversimplify it.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that Dr. John Gray said is, on the other side, you know, like you come home after work or whatever, both, and if he's in his own little cave, got to leave him there, don't bother him. But the other thing, too, is that he said once you understand from the male point of view that she needs to talk. And she needs to verbalize what happened to her all day. And unfortunately, now correct me if I'm wrong, he said that the male will then try to solve the problem if she's, you know, complaining about something. And she really is not looking for a solution. She's just looking for you to listen. She needs a sounding board. Is that true?
And that's the thing that that really supports what I just said, is that we take things much more literal.
Yeah.
So if she's talking about a problem, then literally that's what the topic is, the problem, and it's not at a deeper level that she needs that emotional bond in through conversation. Because during social interactions, it helps calm her down having higher levels of oxytocin, that bonding chemical.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it is just interesting because sometimes, my husband passed away recently, but we were married for almost 53 years. And I think, you know, you learn the differences between the two. But I used to come home and I'd have this problem or this problem and I wanted to talk. He got to a point where, you know, he understood. I just needed to vent. I didn't need any solution to the problems because there probably wasn't a solution to the problem anyway. But just to listen, same thing with him. If I saw that he was kind of in his own little world there, just back off. It's time to back off. There'll be a time when I can start my venting. So it's a matter of understanding each other, right?
Yes, and having that open communication where you set aside the time for whatever, the conversation, whatever, where both people agree upon it, instead of just springing it on someone.
Yeah, it is amazing how, if you understand each other, I have a terrible temper, much worse when I was younger. Now it's not quite so bad, but I was really bad. And, you know, it's like the old saying, you can have a temper and you want to argue with someone or for something, but if you don't have anybody to argue with, it doesn't do any good. So he was always the rock. He was just kind of waiting there. He let me go up the wall, across the ceiling, back down on the wall. And then I got back down. By then, I'm tired, you know. I don't want to. And he's not arguing with me. You can't argue with yourself, you know, internally. Right. It just doesn't work. So, you know, if you have that yin and yang, that it works, right?
Yes. And that's the point of my book, is to understand from the other person's perspective and not just, you know, from your own.
Yeah,
what are their needs?
Yeah, but getting there sometimes is very difficult because they don't want to understand. You have to want to not change, but accommodate, I guess is the word. Is that a good word? Yeah?
Yes, yes. So you can't think of a relationship as two separate people. There's a lot of overlap between them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, you don't, because I used to always laugh, and we didn't use this in our marriage vows, but the two become one. That's bull. You know, I'm sorry.
Right.
You don't become one.
No.
You understand each other. So, like you said, overlap and, you know, move on to the next thing. But you don't become as one. You have parallel tracks. You know, that's what I used to think of, parallel tracks. Sometimes they'll cross, but most of the time they just go straight forward, and you understand each other. But don't give me this stuff about two becoming one, because it's doggone near impossible. I don't know how you would do it.
Yeah. You're going to think the same, do the same.
Yeah.
You know,
and like the same.
And it's not healthy. You need to have some individual identity as well.
And the other thing is, it would be boring, you know, wouldn't it? Both of you think. It'd be like the whole world thinks the same, does the same, are the same. No, that would be a very boring world, seriously.
That's one of the things that why I wrote my book is I became frustrated with the majority of the research out there on gender communication was from a social learning aspect. So the way we're brought up, culture, family, this, that, and the other. But yeah, I kept seeing these same themes of differences over and over from different time periods, different cultures. So then, therefore, I thought there was a biological aspect to it. So the point I'm trying to make is it became, like you said, uninteresting to hear that's just all social learning when there's a whole other world out there that there's just not addressed. There's not enough diversity of thought.
Now, I wonder if maybe that's the reason divorce is so prominent, you know? I wonder if that has anything to do with it. Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. If you talking about divorce, I don't know, it seems to be quite more popular today or in recent times that it's been found that the majority of people who file for divorce over age 50 It's filed by the woman.
Really?
Yes.
So why? Is she just fed up? I don't understand.
It's probably a number of reasons for it. And part of it is what happens around age 40 to 50 is menopause starts to kick in. And then estrogen levels for her start to drop. So that changes her, which is going to change the relationship, and he probably becomes complacent at that time in the relationship because it's been so long. And like we already talked about before, that us males, we just don't pick up on the cues nearly as much, that she's changing, the relationship is changing. So therefore, that's probably one of the driving factors as well.
Amazing. So that's what you were talking about in your book when you talk about the stages of life?
Yes.
Okay. So from a teenager to a super senior, a lot of changes.
Yes. So when menopause kicks in, estrogen decreases, depression is more likely to increase, cognitive decline, verbal memory decreases, listening ability, muscle loss, bone density, sexual problems, all those things influence her. So why would you expect the relationship not to change? But yet, like we already talked about, it's been found that it takes much more mental effort and it's much more difficult for us males to process relationship type of information. So these things are all going on, and if he's not picking up on it, you can see how that changes the whole relationship and probably not for the better.
What about the change that they talk about? And thank God my husband was not that way, but, you know, he gets to a point, I don't know, 50 years old, you know, maybe 60, I don't know when the time is. But, you know, you got to buy a Corvette or a Porsche.
Huh.
Or, you know, you're looking at two 20s instead of the 40-year-old woman you're married to, you know, that type of thing. Is that what happens to a male?
I'm guessing with that, that, you know, dramatically testosterone levels start to decrease by that. And testosterone is related to aggression, power, status, all those types of things. So maybe it's substitutions for the testosterone levels decreasing.
Oh.
So when you're younger, you have higher levels of testosterone, and that's the power, aggression, status. And then when your testosterone decreases, how do you maintain or replace power, status, and aggression?
A new car. A red one.
There you go.
So, and talking about the communication thing, it is, you know, if you can talk with each other so that you understand that these things will happen, because I remember when I went through menopause, and I had this, you know, the same typical things that everybody, you get some depression, you have mood swings and all that kind of thing. So I just, you know, sat down with my husband and I said, you know, I'm going to have this. I'm going into menopause. It's going to happen to me. So I'll warn you, you know, when it's coming, I'll just say, probably a good idea, Rick, leave the room, you know, and then we'll be okay. And that used to work out like a charm, you know. He said,
see, that's
fine.
The thing is, if you didn't say that, he wouldn't know what's going on and probably think that he did something.
Yeah, there you go. So
she's depressed because I said something wrong.
Yeah. And he didn't, you know, it's just, I don't know. Life
there's something on that as well.
Okay.
That within a given month, you know, for women of reproductive age or whatever, with their hormonal changes within the month, that when their estrogen levels are high, then they focus much more on intimacy. They have that, more of that sexual desire. But as they approach the ovulation, but then as estrogen levels decrease, then they concentrate much more on food and calorie intake. So they either think about intimacy as estrogen levels are high, and then when estrogen levels drop, then they think more about the food and calorie intake. So he needs to be aware of it, that if she's not in the mood for sexual intimacy, it may not have much to do with him. It may just be that that part of the month, her estrogen levels are much lower. So it goes back to our basic needs, our needs for survival, the food, low estrogen, and high estrogen, reproduction, with the intimacy.
Fantastic. Hey, we're a lot more complicated than we think, you know?
It
just is.
Especially for us.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, do you have a website?
Yes, drstephenfurlish.com.
Okay, spell it for him. Spell it out.
Oh, okay. D-R, and then STEPHENFURLICH.com.
Terrific. And your book, Sex Talk, I assume it's available every place, yeah?
Yeah, so the easiest way is just to go on Amazon, the books category, and then just type in my last name, Furlich, F-U-R-L-I-C-H, and then it pops right up.
Terrific. Great conversation. You're welcome to come back anytime because sex is always fun to talk about.
Thanks for having me, Mary Jane. It was interesting to hear your life experiences tie in to what I found in the book.
Oh, you know, it's one of those things. Once you live it, and you can, if you can explain it, then it's best. So that's why it's good to have a book like yours.
That's one of the things that I find most gratifying is when someone says that they can relate to it from personal experience.
You betcha. Take good care, and I hope things work out for you, too. Are you married?
No.
I
just write about it.
Oh,
I just try to help others.
I love it. How old are you?
47.
Oh, you got a long way to go. Anyway, take care, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Dr. Stephen Furlich, and again, it's Sex Talk, How Biological Sex Influences Gender Communication Differences Throughout the Life Stages. And boy, I can attest to that.
Some may see a sprinter. At the NFHS, we see a future leader already off to the races. Some may see a volleyball player.
One hit! Way to go, girl! Woo!
At the NFHS, we see a spike in confidence that will help her achieve her potential. What else do we see? Musicians learning to march to their own beat. We're the NFHS. The national leader and advocate for high school athletics and activities in America, helping today's teenagers develop the skills they need to become tomorrow's leaders. And we see it happening in communities across California every single day. Learn more about the NFHS commitment to youth at nfhs.org. This message presented by the NFHS, the National Federation of State High School Associations.
Did you know that everyday conversations can help your children build math skills? Discovering numbers and shapes with your children in any language is a great way to make math fun. When you get excited about pointing and counting or comparing shapes, your child will love to learn math, and they are never too young to start. Visit talkingisteaching.org/resources/math for free videos, tips, and guides to transform everyday moments into magical moments for math.
Listen up, women. Heart disease kills a woman every 80 seconds, and we die of heart attacks at twice the rate of men because our symptoms are too often missed or dismissed, even by doctors. This isn't just a crisis. It's a catastrophe. Be a force for change. If you experience nausea, heartburn, extreme fatigue, shortness of breath, or pain in the chest, jaw, or neck, speak up and get your heart checked. Visit womensheartalliance.org.
Well, let's change this from talking about sex in Sex Talk. That was the name of the book. We're going to be talking about, I don't know, do you feel like life is holding you back and you don't know why? Well, we're going to check in with psychic therapist, spiritual teacher, and author of The Secret That's Holding You Back, Vincent Jenna. Now, he wants to explore our inner beliefs and gives us guidance on how we can tap into our superconscious and soul minds and unlock infinite new possibilities. Vincent is known as the visionary of our times. He is a psychic. He is a medium. He also has his own podcast called The Jenna Effect. Vincent, it's been too long since we've talked.
Absolutely, Mary Jane. But you know what?
What?
You know, when it comes to time, there is no such thing as time. We connect as if we just spoke yesterday. So that always happens. Thank you for having me back on the show.
Absolutely. Now, define conscious and consciousness or superconscious. I've had so many different definitions. I don't understand what the heck it is anymore.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, Sigmund Freud is the one that really did the work on the human mind and divided it into three sections.
Okay.
So the smallest section, which only accounts to 2 to 5%, is our awareness or our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Our awareness is our ability to see things, take in things, be able to think, talk to somebody, communicate, understand something. It's an awakened state of being and mind.
Okay.
So that's our awakened consciousness, our awareness. Then there is a subconscious part. I'll come back to the subconscious part in a moment.
Okay.
The third part he defined was the unconscious part, because he believed that there was a knowing that took place within humans without knowing why we knew, right? So that had to come from an area of our mind, an area of our ability or our existence that we really couldn't define that much, but that we had to know exactly existed, because we know the difference between right and wrong. We automatically knew certain things that they also called intuition. Where was that all coming from? So he labeled it the unconscious mind.
It's sort of like deja vu, right?
Well, that's part of it. That's actually something a little bit different. Deja vu is actually tapping into the future without knowing that you're tapping into the future.
Oh.
Okay, that's what deja vu actually is.
Uh-huh.
But then there's this middle part between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, which is the subconscious mind. That's the part that's automatic. It's all beneath our awareness. It happens on its own, but that's the part of the mind that controls your breathing, controls your heartbeat automatically. So all the physical things that happen automatically, he stated, is the subconscious mind that's causing that. But the subconscious mind also causes automatic thinking and behaviors.
Oh.
Now, what
trains the subconscious mind into those that behavior or the thinking is the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. So once you grow up, many things fall down into the unconscious level now. Even though you have memories, those memories still come from that unconscious part that you can pull to the surface.
Okay.
Little Mary Jane is in there in the unconscious mind, all the things that she experienced while she was growing up. All people have that in their unconscious mind.
Now, wait. I'm growing up.
Ahead.
That's where I'm getting the unconscious mind. Can I get unconscious mind from other lifetimes?
Well, yes, you can add to the unconscious. Your present mind can come in with that. You take your mind with you, by the way. Your mind is...
Wait. Where am I going? I'm taking it and I'm going where?
Well, where we came from. There is that dimension. Now, we're going off into subjects, going definitely a tangent, but it's also part of who we are.
Okay.
We came from the spiritual realm before the physical realm. The physical realm did not exist here first.
Okay.
We were created as energy beings from that intelligence, source, spirit, whatever you want to call it, but a higher level of power that then divided part of itself into us. So we are the spiritual beings. And as spiritual beings, when we were created with still the ability to think, to feel, to reason. And that was a mind that was given to us because there'd be no sense in creating something that didn't have the ability to recognize itself or anything else.
All right? Yeah.
That's what the intelligence was. Now, to try to understand that completely, we're not meant to in this physical realm.
Okay.
All we're meant to do is to understand as best we can and accept as best we can where we come from.
Okay.
So now a physical world was created and all different physical worlds were created for us to be able to go to experience ourselves.
Hmm.
So we are filled with all the knowing because once we were created and created in its image, that means we know what it knows, what source knows. But we don't know we know it and we don't know what it is until you experience it. It's like when you go to school. There's all these subjects you learn, and everybody wants to know, why do I have to learn science? Why do I have to learn algebra? Well, of course, you don't know why you have to learn it while you're learning it, but then you figure it out once you experience it. So you go to the store, and you got a job, and you buy your first pair of jeans, and it's 20% off. And now you go, oh, that's what a percentage is. Oh, I get it now. And so you understand and finally know
because you
what you
experience
knew.
It. Yeah.
You learn. You experience it.
Okay.
So we're here to experience everything we already that's built inside of us that we know.
Okay.
So that becomes consciousness then.
Okay. Now,
and awareness.
We are all made of energy, right?
Yes.
Now we can agree on that. And I remember when I was a little Catholic, I'm a Catholic girl, so little kid in catechism in grade school, parochial school, of course, it said, God always was and always will be. Well, excuse me, isn't that the definition of energy? Always was, always will be, can change forms, but it never goes away. Yes?
Absolutely. That is the exact definition of energy.
Okay, so... We just change for when we go over the spiritual world because you're a medium too. So I'm going to get you in.
Yes.
I'm going to jump in all over the place, but I think it'll give me a little more perspective. As a medium, when we pass over, if we're still energy, what do we change to, or do we change?
We do. We actually have an energy form. All energy has a certain form. We tend to think of it as just scattered particles floating around in space.
Yeah.
But it actually isn't. It has a form. As a matter of fact, you can see energy during a thunderstorm. You see certain energy. Those lightning bolts are a form of energy, right? It's a form. It's not just scattered all over the place.
Yeah.
You actually see the form of this energy, okay? Another form of energy, it would be an explosion. So fireworks you see fireworks and they have a form, right? They know how to put these particles together that once ignited creates this energy and energy in a specific form. So energy can take a form, and we have that form. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell everybody what we look like when we leave the human body.
Oh, please, that I got to hear.
All right, okay. I want you to take the vision of an angel with its wings wide open, male or female, doesn't matter. The wings are wide open. We see these beautiful wings. They're spread out really, really far, right? Now I want you to imagine taking a pencil and drawing an outline around that entire angel. All right? So you start with the head. You got a little around there. Now you go all the way up to the wing on one end. Now you come down and then go to the body, go all the way down to the feet together. The feet are together kind of thing. And then a little turn. And now you go up and you're going up and you're doing the other wing. And you're coming around, and you're connecting it to the top of the head.
Okay.
Now take the picture of the energy, the picture of the angel out, and what you're left with is our form. That's how an angel was created, is the angel actually represents our form with our body.
Oh, you mean angels? Are you saying angels were human? No.
Angels, well, the picture we've created of angels in human form with wings is actually our shape as energies.
Oh, okay.
And that's why we created. Why would we create a human with wings? Why did we need to put wings on and then call it an angel, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because we knew deep down inside in our unconscious mind what we look like in form. And so as humans with a human body, we create things in human form. Didn't we create God in our form?
Yeah.
We gave this old man with white hair and a big beard, white beard, and that's God.
Well, I'll be honest with you. That's so silly.
I know. It's very silly, but that's the way it's a way of us being able to
understand,
communicate and understand, right?
Got
so
it.
We make everything physical.
Yeah.
We make everything physical, including deities like angels and God.
Okay.
Right? But in actuality, angels and archangels, well, archangels never had an incarnation here. That's what makes them archangels.
Mm-hmm.
And regular angels had one or two incarnations here specifically to help someone out. But both don't have any karma or anything that they have to take care of that they made a mistake or anything like that. That's why they advanced so much, because they never came down here on Earth to make a whole bunch of mistakes.
Yeah.
Like we have.
Yeah. Over and over again, probably.
Yes, exactly. We don't need to keep doing that. But that's, again, we're trying to fix things. That's our conscious mind and our thinking process, which gets in the way. And that's actually one of the reasons why we hold ourselves back. There are anomalies that go on with the human mind and the brain that have caused our own blockages in order to help us survive.
Okay, so what's that secret that's holding us back?
The fact that we don't believe what we think we believe.
Oh, wait a minute.
And
now you're getting so esoteric here. we don't say that again.
We don't believe what we think we believe.
So what do we believe?
We believe that we're not good enough. We believe that we're not smart enough. We believe that we're not lovable. We believe that we're not worthy enough or deserving enough. And all those beliefs were established for us as we were growing up from receiving all the negative messages from the environment. And that's from our parents and adults in our lives. That's what's been passed down from generation to generation. I call them the I'm not. I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not deserving enough, I'm not worthy enough, I'm not
lovable.
Why
do we do that? So why do we do that?
We create, well, first of all, with children, we have undeveloped minds. But the human brain must always survive. The two highest functions of the brain is, one, to keep us alive, and two, to protect us in order to keep us alive, to keep us going.
Mm-hmm.
But as children, that's underdeveloped, but it still has the motivation to come up with some kind of answer. So now you come into this world from a loving place, from the other side, the other dimension, right? And here we are experiencing life, and bad things happen. Our parents are fighting all the time. They get a divorce, or we're getting abused emotionally, physically, sexually. And we have to answer that. The brain must come up with some kind of answer to the conflict of what is going on, what is wrong, why am I going through this, why is this hurt so much? And the brain answers it in the simplest form that it can. And as it's undeveloped and we don't have reasoning ability yet, it comes up with the answer, it must be me. It must be me. It must be because I'm not lovable. Mommy and daddy are breaking up because it's me. It's my fault. And the truth of that comes out. I'm as a social worker. I am still. But when I was a practicing social worker, and social workers that I knew that were working for family services would have to go in and remove children from abusive parents, right? Or abusive situations, right? And as they're taking the kid out, the kid is yelling, screaming, don't take me from mommy and daddy. It's my fault. It's my fault. I make them mad. I make them upset.
Yeah.
It's me. All right. Well, guess what?
We
do that as adults, too. We go into and try to protect women that are in domestic violence situations. And when we try to teach them to leave that situation, guess what they turn around and say? It's not his fault for abusing me. It's me. I make him mad.
Yeah.
So even as adults with a developed mind, that inner voice wants to say, it's me, I'm bad, I'm wrong. Okay, so why does that matter? Well, now you come into this new consciousness that we're capable of manifesting our own lives. We're capable of achieving our dreams. And that's taught in the psychology world as well as the spiritual realm. But we're not doing it, and it's not happening. But we're following the books, we're following the steps. Why isn't it happening? Because creating and manifesting is connected to our unconscious minds, not our conscious minds. And it has to be that way. Because if it was created to your conscious mind, that would mean that whatever you said and thought in that moment would happen. Now, Lord knows, that would be a turmoil right there, because half this world would be dead already, and the other half would be billionaires from constantly winning the lottery.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Yeah.
So it can't be there. So it's in the unconscious part. But that means anything you believe in your unconscious part is truly what you're going to manifest. So here's when I say our brain, in the process of protecting us, And those harmful feelings of I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy enough, will never get us through life. It would never allow us to survive. As a matter of fact, we've seen people walk around with those beliefs that are conscious. Those are the depressed ones, the suffering from depression and mental disorders, right? So our brain gives us a whole new set of beliefs in what I call the adult-made mind, the defensive mind, to protect us. So instead of believing that I'm not good enough, that's the reason why I'm not getting my job, the job I want, because I don't believe I'm not good enough. It's his fault that I'm not getting the job.
Yeah.
It's her fault that I have a bad relationship. It's my neighbor's fault that I'm miserable in my house all the time. So we come up with all these different new beliefs and excuses so that we can cope in life. We can't cope thinking I'm a piece of dirt, I'm no good, I'm unworthy.
So you blame somebody else.
We would never survive.
Yeah.
So we blame somebody else, but in the same process now, right? Now we're trying to get on that spiritual path, and we're not going to blame anybody else. And we have all these wonderful affirmations. I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, I'm lovable. You know, believe in yourself, believe in God. I believe in all of this, really. But that's what we think we believe on the conscious level. But on the unconscious level, that little kid is still in there with the belief of I'm not good enough, I'm not deserving enough, and that's the part that's influencing the manifesting. And that's the reason why things don't happen for us.
You also
and
said, though,
that's hidden.
That our brains purposely conceal
yes.
our true beliefs in our, in, about ourselves. That's not good.
Yes.
Why do we allow that to happen?
Because we couldn't function. Like I said, we can't walk around believing I'm a piece of dirt. We wouldn't do anything. We wouldn't get out of bed. All those depressed people, that they don't have that defense mechanism. It's not working for them. Their brain hasn't created a strong enough one. And so they're the ones that are not doing anything in life. They commit suicide, right?
Yeah.
They're depressed because they have no coping mechanism. When I became a psychotherapist, one of the first things we learned was cognitive behavioral therapy and techniques to teach people coping skills. Well, coping skills to keep you alive don't allow you to manifest and become a spiritual side, because psychology is only interested in the mind and the behaviors, not the spiritual aspect of who you are.
Hmm.
So it's not about manifesting in a psychological world. It's about surviving in a psychological world.
So how do we...
And surviving and thriving are two different things.
So how do we open up our mind and heart, or whatever we need, to stop what's holding us back?
You pick up my book, The Secret That's Holding You Back. It gives you all the lessons in there, Mary Jane. You knew I was going to say that.
Yeah, of course. I'd be surprised if you didn't.
Exactly. Well, what we're needing and what my book is all about, it teaches us, one, that's happening. People have to accept that that's what's going on with them. It's not that there's no such thing as the law of attraction, or that it doesn't work, or it's all bogus. The information is not bogus. It's ancient proved that when you have those beliefs and you tap into that truth, you can absolutely create anything you want, okay? So you have to have that understanding to start with. Then you have to bring to the surface those hidden beliefs. What I do is a work. Psychologists did that as work back in the 70s. They did inner child work because they knew that the inner child was influencing the adult.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we're beings of novelty. And if something isn't new and exciting and novel anymore, we don't want anything to do with it. So they forgot about the inner work and inner child work, and they went on to other things, just coping skills. Now they're going back to it again. Guess what? Now, in the advent of understanding that, hey, we're still being influenced by that little kid inside, they're going back to that work again. So you have to bring to the surface what that child is believing and then change those beliefs.
Okay.
And there's practices to be able to do that, but that's the cure and the healing of it.
Well, Rich, Vincent, I'm curious, though. What are we really searching for?
Who we really are. We've forgotten. We have forgotten who we are. We wouldn't be searching anymore if we understood it. We've been here long enough. As a matter of fact, we have actually incarnated on this planet too much. I was told by my own guide that one of the reasons why you're seeing what's happening on the Earth today is because we're imploding.
Hmm.
Think about it this way. We're unlimited powers and beings. And the only time we limit ourselves is by incarnating in physical form. So what would happen if you take all this energy, as we spoke in the very beginning here, and you keep compressing it, right?
Yeah.
You compress it into a physical life form, and you keep coming back, and you keep compressing it. After a while, that energy wants to and needs to be expanded. It needs to be out there. It needs to be open. And so energy, because it can be compressed in all different ways and used in different ways, if you compress it too much, that becomes a bomb, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what the atom bomb is. It's compressed atoms. And the compressed atoms are so powerful that they wind up exploding. So we are literally and figuratively imploding. We're hurting ourselves with all these illnesses, and then we're exploding by letting it out on other people.
Hmm.
That's what you see happening on this planet. There's a bunch of energy that's just exploding all over the place because we constantly are compressing it here. And because we've forgotten who we are and keep coming back doing that, it's happening automatically. But we also are forgetting who we are and allowing all of that hurt and pain from our unconscious mind to take over and to take it out. Because if you look at people today, and it's been said, it's like adults acting like children. And I've heard people turn around and say, oh, my gosh, he looks like a kid having a temper tantrum. I can't believe that they did that. They're fighting like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we aren't. It's only kids fight like that. Right?
Yeah.
Kids want to hurt each other. Kids want to take their toys back. Kids want to play in the playground area and get the other kids away.
So we do the same thing as an adult. So then we do, when we become an adult, we do the same thing.
Well, the whole thing is that...
But on a meaner level.
Yeah, definitely, because we have more ability then.
Yeah.
But therefore, it is not the adult in us that's doing that.
It's the child.
It's the child in us that's doing that. I'm going to say something that sounds really off the wall, but let me finish the whole sentence. Every adult, and when I say that, I mean those that don't have any kind of mental disorder or the outsiders,
yeah.
But the majority of adults are rational, reasonable, reliable, and stable. All adults are. However,
we could be, maybe.
No, listen. However, every child is not rational, reasonable, reliable, and stable. Therefore, when you see an adult acting unreasonably, it is not the adult that's doing that. It's the child in the adult that's doing that.
So how do we chase that child away?
Well, we don't take it away. That's what I said. We bring that child's beliefs to the surface because that child that's acting that way, they only act that way because they don't feel lovable. They don't feel liked. They don't feel attended to the right way. Just think of children when they're growing up.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
They only act up when they feel that they're not cared for.
Gotcha.
And they're not attended to properly. So we've got to attend to the child within us, bring the feelings to the surface that the child has that are dysfunctional, and change those beliefs.
Now, we're running out of time, so that means this is going to have to be continued. But your website, give me your website.
It's VincentJenna.com. And that's with a G-E-N-N-A. And anybody can go there and connect with me there. I actually have a new television show that's going to be coming out and airing. It's going to be on Ethereal TV. It's a streaming network. And they'll be able to find that on Roku and on Amazon Fire Stick. They'll be able to download the app, and they'll see all of us. My new show is called Living Your Soul's Purpose and the Life You Love. And I also still have the podcast, The Jenna Effect, so people can go there. But all of that information is on my website at The Secret That's Holding You. I'm sorry, VincentJenna.com.
Fantastic.
My book is The Secret That's Holding You Back.
Absolutely fantastic. And Vincent, stay on the line because I want to talk to you off the air because we got to get caught up just a couple minutes, okay?
Okay, all right, no
and
problem.
Thank you very, very much for being with us. And again, folks, that's VincentJenna.com. The name of the book, The Secret That's Holding You Back. Got to get rid of it. That inner child, we got to do something about that. Bring it out and put it aside. Anyway, thanks, Vincent, and glad to have all of you with me on Pop Talk. Check us out every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, but also 24/7 at khi.com. Just click on Listen and then Audio on Demand, and you can listen to the two-hour show for that week. You know, it's one of those things, folks, we just have to believe and share and be part of life. And let me give you my saying for the week. Life is the first gift, love is the second, and understanding the third. That is what we try to do on Pop Talk every week, going in search of that truth. And as always, I leave you with this. Live simply, laugh often, love deeply.